Thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation. Thank you, Maria, and the team for the organization. And please feel free to interrupt any time for questions as we get along. So it's a paper. The title has changed several times, but the relatively stabilized version is predicting intra-household allocation and individual poverty, an assessment using direct evidence on sharing. And it's a joint work with Guy Lacroix, who's at HEC Montréal, and Luca Tiberti in Quebec City at Laval University. So the motivation of this work is, it's a very old motivation, because this literature on intra-household inequality and sharing resources within the household is very old, starting in economics, at least started with Samuelson and Gary Baker's models, and then it was kind of revived by the collective model literature around Capori, Bourguignon, Martin Groening, and many others. So in this early literature, there was some results on two things. One is testing the model, a model aimed at really making welfare analysis at the individual level. So these are models where each member of the family has its own welfare function, and which correspond to different type of determinants that could be consumption, leisure, or other aspects that influence welfare. And these models are aimed to really say something about intra-household allocation of time, resources, well-being, etc. But this early literature had results on two things: testing and identification. So the tests of the model were mainly tests of the fundamental assumption of this model, which is Pareto efficiency of household decision making. So there is no welfare waste in the way people decide within the household, which is, of course, something that can be contested and debated when it comes to one-off decisions or rare decisions that can lead to strategic behavior in the household. The second thing and main thing for us today is identification of the model. So in part, identification of the sharing process, and possibly the identification of individual welfare functions that could then lead to a complete welfare analysis at the individual level. The what we call the sharing rule, so the allocation process in the household, was identified, but at the margin. It was always up to a constant, so that we didn't really have the identification of the levels obtained by each member of the household, say, for instance, level of consumption. It was really marginal sharing rule, so how do we spend, how does the household spend one extra dollar on the wife, the husband, the children? And it's not something easily observed, so it was hard to kind of validate these predictions or these estimations. It's relevant for policy, because that's when you depart from the existing situation. You want to know the marginal departure, the gradient of the sharing rule. I will come to this point at the end. But for welfare analysis, it would be more interesting to have really the absolute sharing rule, and in the past 10 years, this kind of development have become possible. There was, first of all, a high refinement of testing. I was talking about testing, so a lot of non-parametric tests of the collective model around the team of Frédéric Vermeulen, Laurence Tchirchi, and Bram de Hoek, and their students and colleagues. And also some advance to estimate the complete sharing rule, starting with Groening, Capori, Loubel, as far as the sharing of consumption is concerned. There were a few attempts to model labor supply in a collective framework before, through various projects, and also relying, as in this Groening, Capori, Loubel seminal paper, also relying on single individuals. But I mean, this is probably the most complete achievement in this in the literature at this stage, and with a lot of extensions on specific groups like the elderly, including children in the picture, like some work done with Olivier Denis or the paper by Dunbar Loubel Pandacour, which I will refer to as DLP in the next slide. An identification of the complete sharing rule, so how much goes to the wife, to the husband, and to the children, has two advantages. The first one is that you can actually do welfare analysis at the individual level, and you can actually do poverty analysis at the individual level. So a child is poor not because he lives in a poor household, as we do in 99.99% of the policy analysis, but a child is poor because he's level of resources or the level of expenditure accruing to this child is below a child poverty line. Beyond this type of individual welfare analysis, we might be close to something that we could actually evaluate to say if the collective model is something that is totally out of the mark and that should be thrown away, or if there is some sort of validity that makes that we can be reassured and possibly encourage further use and application throughout all the world of development policy analysis and so on. So that's the kind of the idea here is a simple idea of trying to validate the model. Maybe validate is a big word because it's a simple comparison, but in a way it's a form of validation. And how do we do that? We leverage an exceptional data set for Bangladesh. So it's Bangladesh 2004. So of course, the external validity of our validation is naturally limited to this, but someone has to start somewhere. And then we start there, because there we've got this data that includes a fully individualized expenditure data. So basically, we know how much is consumed, both for food and non-food items, how much is consumed by each member in the household. There is this kind of data for a few rich countries. It started notably in Denmark with Martin Brøning and Tuts Bank on some Danish data looking at these kind of things. But it's rare, it's costly, of course, to get this level of information. And it's even more rare and more scarce for poor countries. And a very few data sets of that kind. The only one I have in mind is some data on Senegal, where actually you've got expenditure by units in the household that would be in polygamous households, the expenditure of the different women and their children. But not purely individualized, it's this cells in the household. So this individualized data will allow us here to test, first of all, the identification assumptions, the identifying assumptions of the model that mainly rely on individual angle curves. Secondly, and mainly it will allow us to compare observed resource shares and predicted resource shares from the prediction of a simple collective model. And to draw implications for poverty analysis, comparing basically individual poverty with standard equivalized poverty measures as we do usually. And throughout that analysis, we are going to try different strategies to identify the model using what has been suggested in the literature over the past years, the recent years. It's all quite recent, and we are going to check also the performance of the model when using different type of assignable goods, because the whole identification will rely on specific goods which are consumed by a certain member of the household. And typically it's clothing, because in standard data, probably the only thing or one of the rare thing that you can say is consumed by say adult women is clothing, because usually you have one line of item in your expenditure survey, which is female clothing or adult female clothing. So you know at least that for adult female, adult male, and children. And it's reminiscent in a way of Deaton's work in that the book I cite here, but also some paper on Thailand, I think, where it's checking the estimation of the cost of children, which is similar idea. I mean, yeah, we're going to look at the share of children, it's the same thing. Depending, so Deaton was using the Rothbard approach, depending on the type of assignable good that you use. And in some cases, if you use, for instance, alcohol that is consumed only by adults, because of underreporting and so on, you may have completely different pictures than cases where you use clothing, for instance. So unfortunately, the result will not be independent from the type of assignable good that you use. We're going to use three goods: clothing, because it's commonly available as an exclusive goods or assignable good in standard expenditure data. But we're going to also use rice or total food and do as if they were commonly used, just to use one specific type of good as an assignable good. So now a bit of modeling. So we're going to have just a private consumption. There's no public consumption in the picture. We could add that. I will comment on that at the end. So you have couples indexed by N, families indexed by N. So we are all couples with 0 to up to 3 children in the household. And we are going to use N equals 0, so childless couples, as the reference group for identification. And we are going to use them as we use single individuals in previous papers to perform identification for couples with children. Our main interest is how resources are shared in couples with children. And in these families with children, we have individuals I, female, male, father, mother, or children. Children are pooled. We are not able to say how much goes to this child or this child. It's, in a way, children are unitary, but we know we can differentiate how much resources go to the children as a whole, depending on how many girls or boys, if children are old or young. So we can actually get a notion of, or an idea of, how much pro-boy discrimination there is, for instance. So the rest of the notation is, we reason in log, so it makes everything additive and relatively easy. So x is the log expenditure. Eta is going to be our main object of interest, because eta is the sharing rule. So it's the fraction of resources accruing to individual I in household of type N, and it's going to depend on total resources and a set of household characteristics. Okay, so we're going to estimate this function eta. So that's the sharing rule. And then we're going to use also this observed sharing rule, thanks to the individualized data for Bangladesh. And we have two types of budget shares. So let's not confuse resource shares and budget shares. These are budget shares. So that's how much money is spent on good K, so say food, for instance. So maybe that's 20% of resources in household of type N spent on food, for instance. So that's at the household level. And this is going to be angle curve, basically, so budget share function of total expenditure, but at the individual level. So how much individual I in household of type N spend on good of type K based on his own resources. Okay. So based on the resource distribution from my own money, how much I spend on food. And basically,
does that mean you assume that children have resources independently of their parents?
Well, at the end of the day, they consume a certain amount of resources, and if you sum up this amount of resources, then that boils into their share of resources. It doesn't mean that they earn their own money. You could actually, totally independently in this function here, you could have in Z bargaining factors, like the work activity of different household members, the wife, the children themselves. You could check if children are working, they get more resources than if they are not working, and so on. Actually, we test that, and we don't find any child labor effect in the speaker. So the total budget share on good K is simply the sum of the individual budget share weighted by the resources accruing to each member I. Okay, and that's relatively simple to show, and because this is in a way not related to the collective model, and it's an identity, direct identity that you get just by summing up an individual consumption. But the structure of it, the structure of the sharing rule and the structure
here as having individual bucket share function of the individual resource share is
derived from a collective model, but it could also be a model without efficiency. Arthur Lubel has recent development with a very similar structure with just one parameter that is departing, showing how much you depart from efficiency. And this kind of model could actually be also tested in this, this framework.
So this is the resources according to individual I, because that's the total, it's in log, but it's basically it's a log total expenditure plus log share move. So not if you take the exponential of that, it's total resources divided by or multiply the fraction of resources accruing to this, this person. And that's really what I sometimes call X underscore IN, that's the resources of person I in household N. So there are many approach to estimate this, Rothbard, since 1943, Browning, Capoure, Lubel, but they use many years of data on price variation because they also have Barkan scales that represent economies of scale in the household, which we don't really look at here. And Dunbar, Lubel, Pandacour. And all these methods are based basically on the old Rothbard approach, that is to use assignable goods, and typically clothing, as an assignable good. And they also all rely on some form of preference stability assumption, which is typically in Rothbard, for instance, the idea that the preference of adults don't change when they have a child. The preference of adults upon the assignable good. It doesn't mean that they don't change, but for instance, typically here, their own preferences upon clothing does not vary before and after the arrival of the child. It's the necessary condition that you have to make for identification. And then there's a whole set of different of similar or related type of assumptions that have been made through the different papers. And I use their kind of nickname here, but I'm going to detail the one I just alluded to, which is in the Barbell Panacon named SAT, which is similar across type. And it's exactly that kind of things. It's preferences of specific household number don't change across household types, which means household size. So from n equals 0 without children to n equal 1 to n 2. So let's illustrate that here. If you have a K, which is now an exclusive good, so it's K with subscript I, so it's a good consumed only by, for instance, I equal F, the fathers. So it would be only a father's clothing or mother's clothing. Then the budget, the household budget share spent on that exclusive good, and good consumed exclusively by fathers, is only the father's budget share time resources accruing to fathers. And then in this context, the similar cross tab is just saying that for that good, individual angle curves are independent from N. And that's derived from the fact that preferences upon that good are independent from the household type, so the size of the household. So basically, this small angle curve here, so small W, which is the individual angle curve, is independent from N, and you can actually estimate the complete model just on the basis of pooling families with children and families without children. So this equation gives you a system here for those without children and those with children. We are interested in this. If we had single individual, then this would be 1 here. Oh, sorry, this would be 1, so this would be 0, and we would and this would be 1. And with single, we would directly get this function. And here, we would directly recover what's left, which is the sharing. So here, we don't use single, as in BCL or in previous work with Olivier Denis. Here, we use couples without children as the reference group. So what we need to do in addition to the other assumption here is to have some prior about how childless couples share resources. So we need to say this is, for instance, a half, you know, when you don't have kids, half goes to the wife, half goes to the husband. But it's not necessarily true. So what we do, we actually use our individualized data and the observed sharing rule for childless couple to put a value in here, and then we can recover basic budget shares for individual I equal F and M. And in here, we can actually then retrieve, in the system, retrieve the shares accruing to father and mother, and the shares accruing to children is just the residual from total consumption. And that's it. So this is when you take the full individual angle curve from basically identified from childless couples. Now if you do something more DLP, you would go parametric from the start, and you would just posit here individual angle curve, which is, for instance, linear in log expenditure. So for childless couple, you would just have a big ugly equation, and the last term is on x is eta time beta. If you know these things from your data, you recover beta. If you know beta, you recover eta. So it's the same, the same logic as before. Okay. What they do is not exactly that. What they do is actually they don't use individualized, or sorry, they don't use exclusive goods like clothing for men and women only. They also use it for children, and assume this SAT assumption for children, which we call so CSAT, which means including children. And if you do that, then you forget about childless couple. You only work on people with children. And that means you have n equal 1 to 3. So you have three equations. So you have 3 beta, and you have 3 eta for women and 3 eta for men. Eta for children are, again, just residuals. And that means you have nine unknowns, but you also have 9 equations because you have these equations for 3 family type and for 3 type of goods, because you also have children. So you have clothing for men, clothing for women, and clothing for children. So you have exactly, so it's just exactly identified, and that's a value. We also use SAP, which is, in my sense, a bit more extreme, which is assuming that basically the slope here is within a group, within a type of families, so say couples with 2 children, for instance, the slopes are the same for women, father, mother, and children. And they use that, and sometimes they call it similar across people, and sometimes they combine SAP and SAP for identification. But we are not going to look at that. I can just test it in the model, in the application, along the other assumptions.
So, can I ask, so maybe when a couple moves from having no children to having one child, then what happens is that the parents' preferences for the individual budget shares remain intact for let's say, men's clothing. But obviously then, the husband in the family can't
budget share.
But the resource shares also go down at the same time.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the whole. I mean, the
so you need to make some assumptions about the sharing the resources. But here you now use the unique data.
Yeah, the unique data is going to be read to for validation in the end, because if you see that, for instance, you don't need to look at childless couples.
Oh, you have
a
priori assumption about the sharing.
Maybe what I should have done is to start with Rothbard, because I mean the easiest way to understand this thing is Rothbard. Rothbard is exactly this intuition. It's not about sharing between mother, father, and children. It's only sharing between adults and children. And basically, the intuition is that when you have a child, you're going to reallocate a certain amount of expenditure on that child, which means you're going to spend less, or at least in fraction of your resources, spend less on your own good, which is typically your clothing, adult clothing.
Yeah.
So this is exactly the intuition of Rothbard. But if you do that, you can do this identification, which is exactly the identification I've described before, only if you suppose that in your utility function, there is separability between expenditure upon your clothing and family size. Basically, that your consumption decisions are separable from fertility decisions. This is the fundamental Rothbard assumption. This type of separability is exactly
the SAT assumption that we are making here.
But the total resources could also react because of labor supply changes, for example.
If systematically people, when they have children, need to work more to pay for their children, and because they work more, then they also change the bargaining rule in the household and so on, then it might create complication, even though we can control for the labor market participation of women in the model. Yeah. But we don't, it's a partial model in the sense that we don't endogenize labor supply in here, which would make things much more complicated. It's ongoing work with a few people in this group, like Arthur and Olivier, but it's at this stage it's purely consumption. So Rothbard is this, because Rothbard, now you don't have KF or KM, you have goods consumed by KA, which is the adult as a whole, men, women, as a unitary couple. And that means you have angle curve for adults, which is clothing for adults, men and women indifferently. And that means that your childless couples directly give you the angle curve for adults. So we directly, from childless couple, identify this. If you assume that it doesn't change when you get children, that is when your N becomes positive, strictly positive, then you know these things from there, and you directly recover the resource shares of adults. And the resource shares of adults is total expenditure minus the resource share of children. So Rothbard is just saying that very, very direct, without any complication here. So the data are this Bangladesh survey. So it's a luxurious survey because we observe a lot of things, including this individualized consumption. But the drawback, as often in this costly survey, is the size. It's a smaller sample. We end up with only 800 households here with 0, 1, 2, 3 children. With standard household characteristics and fully individualized data. So it has been collected by a specially trained team of enumerators, mixing students and researchers from Canada and from Bangladesh, mixing researchers with background as sociologists, anthropologists, or economists, or survey specialists. At least one of the members of the team is from the region. So the survey has been done in different regions, but every time one of the members is from the region of, where the data are collected, to know the local norms and culture. And they spend 3 full days with the families. We follow the families in their data and cooking eating, so cooking preparation, food preparation, and eating, with special ways to the dietitian techniques and so on to assess how much is eaten by each member, with the special scales to weigh the food and the ingredients and so on. That's for the food consumed in the household. For the food consumed outside the home, they have to ask, so there's a 1 week recall. And for all the rest, non-food, then they interview the head, or which is often the husband, or the wife. Sometimes they validate with the person who is concerned by the expenditure, if it's not him or her. And they also have an inventory of goods consumed individually or jointly over the past years. So typically our clothing expenditure is going to be in this category. And food is going to be a large share, as I'm going to show. Well, actually, I have the statistics at the end, if you want. But basically, depending on household size, food represents around 60%, or between 60 and 70% of total expenditure. So it's a really large chunk of the total budget, because these are very, very poor households. So the results, first to test the assumption, then to compare, observe, and predict the resource share for families with children, and then to draw implication for poverty analysis. Come back to this sub-points here. So I'll skip this, but just to show you what we call the first assumption, I call it non-parametric SAT. So parametric SAT was to use directly a parametric specification for angle curves for adults, the vein of Dunbar-Lubel-Pandacourt. CSAT is exactly Dunbar-Lubel-Pandacourt, because we also use child clothing,
to have identify the system of 9 equations. RSAT is just robot, so it's going to be same assumptions, but when you just look at sharing between adults and children, and semi-parametric RSAT. So basically, we've got from our individualized data, we have individual angle curve. We know exactly budget shares for different level of individual resources, and these are the p-values. For instance, here in non-parametric SAT testing, the equality or the similarity of individual angle curves. So here it's going to be men and for men and women between a childless couple and a couple with one child. You know that these are this fundamental assumption, and the p-value is very large, so it's not rejected here. Same for families with two children, but if and here we are in a model with using clothing SAT and a quadratic form in log expenditure, which is our favorite specification in the rest. But for large families, these assumptions, this identifying, so it's really a fundamental assumption, is rejected. Okay. Same for this approach. And here, as we start from families with one, so we test the equality of individual angle curve between families with one kid and two kids, and then one kid and three kids. And here it's rejected here, and here in both cases, so it's not so robust here. Rothbard is showing the same as here. As you can see, it's rejected only for large families. So the thing to remember is that for large families, we may have problems. So the first type of results here, compare observed and predicted resource shares. So the first thing is to compare this function once you estimate it with the structural model. So you have this function, this resource sharing function. But you can we can also regress the observed resource shares, for example, the share of children, with a logistic form, which makes it similar to the structural model. We can actually estimate this observed resource shares on the same characteristics. And if we do that, we've got here the result of the logistic estimation of the observed resource share, that's for children, okay? And here, that's for different models, structural models. So for children, what we put in Z, we put number of children, average age, proportion of boy, urban, women's income share, so it's the share of income controlled by women in the household, and whether it's a nuclear household or not, because data are so small that we have some household that also live with a grandfather, an uncle, and so on. So we have to assume separability between the nuclear household, so mother, father, and children, and these other household members. But we can do because we have individualized data, so we can actually take out from total expenditure the small share of expenditure corresponding to public goods and corresponding to other members. But just to be clean, we actually control for the whether this household is really nuclear or if they live with other people. And this is the model result. So basically what you see is that, of course, the share of accruing to children increase with the number of children, increase with the age of children, increase with the proportion of boys. So there is evidence of pro-boy discrimination, urban, and increase with the how much money is controlled by women in the household. And unfortunately, there is some dependence on being nuclear, but we do more robustness check around that in the paper. The model, for instance, non-parametric SAT, with clothing as the exclusive good. So now it's as if we didn't have this individualized data, and we estimate the model with clothing, you find the same, of course not the same coefficient, but at least the same size, and sometimes similar magnitude for the main variable, especially for the bargaining factor, which is women's income. And it's true, now if we pretend that food is in general available as individualized expenditure, if we add that, what it would give. So of course that works better because food is the largest share of total expenditure. And food actually even points to the provoid discrimination. But we have it here, even though it's not significant. And then we can also use one specific type of food item, rice, and it tends to go in the same direction. But it's hard to see from this because even though actually the models are not nested, there are certain ways to actually test equality of coefficient. We're not totally sure it would be relevant in that case. So what we are going to test or to check is directly the prediction results for the validation. So which is what we've got here. So this is for the children's shares per child. So for families with one children, we find that observed, this kid gets around 25% of resources. Okay, with our best model, which is the non-parametric set with clothing, we see the confidence interval. We are right on it. Okay, the prediction is okay. The non-parametric set with food gets a bit larger. With rice, less precise. That's more like Dunbar et al. Style here. It's close, a bit below. And that's Rothbard, again, not so bad. For two children, again, we are pretty close. Rice start to give quite bad predictions. And three children, we are above. You remember that when we test identifying assumption, we find that with families with three children, the assumption is actually, the SATs assumption is rejected. And so it's not abnormal, not surprising to find some discrepancies here between the predicted resource share and the observed resource share. If you look at mothers, and fathers will be just the rest, if you look at mothers, we are not so bad. Again, here we under-predict, even though here we over-predict for children, and we under-predict the shares for women here. And one model is doing very bad, is with rice, and possibly because of self-production of these goods in many households. There are some explanations which we couldn't really find, but it shows that it's not independent. And the reassuring observation is that clothing is doing a good job, which is good because that's the type of good that you find in most expenditure data in the world, meaning that if we have good performance with clothing, we could replicate this, not the validation, but we could replicate the estimation of collective model for many countries just on the basis of clothing as the identifying good. Okay. We do a bit more than just looking at averages. We actually look at distributions. I'm going to show you that in a minute. But we can also test the quality of distribution. So these are the distribution of shares. So if you split sharing rules in four, in partitions of four, so for instance, shares accruing to children in a quartile, for instance, according to observed shares and estimated shares. So you have these 16 cells, and you look at how many observations are on the diagonal, basically. So you can do chi-square tests to basically check the equality of these two distributions, the distribution of resource shares observed and predicted. And what we see is that for one child, that these are the p-value, we don't reject the similarity of these distributions. Same for two children. And again, not surprising, we do reject for three children. And so for three children, the predictions are not so good. We try with different partitions, but the picture is similar. These are, now if we move to resource shares, so that these are the resource shares at the individual level, and this is going to be the individual resources, not shares, but resources in dollars or in taka. So for individual I in household N. So let's look at children, and these are vintiles of the distribution. So we pull all the children in 20 groups of equal size. This is the observed resources. It's normalized, probably, I don't know if it's in dollars per day, or I'm not sure. And here, observe estimated. What you see is that it should go on the 45 degree line if the predictions were perfect. It doesn't. But the important thing, because of course here you see that for, say, richer children, the observed share is smaller than the estimated shares. Typically, at the tails, you have bad predictions. You have more variance in the estimated shares than in observed shares. Observed share compared to estimated share, will be some measurement error and so on. Same here, you've got some departure. But the important thing is that there's not much re-ranking. So even if we predict this group here, for instance, we don't predict the right level of resources, we're still saying that this group is richer than this group. It's not true here. You see some re-ranking between these two. You see some re-ranking between these two here. But mainly, there is little re-ranking, which is important for inequality analysis when you bring it from across household to a mix of across household and within household. So basically between all the children in the population. And it's important for poverty, relative poverty analysis. So I will finish with two things, if I have the few minutes left. One is the poverty analysis, and two is the main conclusions. If you use these individual resources, so the observe one gives you a poverty for children, that's child poverty rate, of 57%. If you use now for a per capita approach, here the per adult equivalent poverty rate, so ignoring intra-household inequality, is 36. So that means mothers, fathers, or children are poor at a 36% level. Okay. Here it's when per capita is quite extreme because it assumes that the needs of children is equal to the need of adults. If you now you decrease the needs of children according to FAO recommendation for age-specific child needs, then the poverty line for children goes down, and we use the World Bank value of this year, 1.25 per day for adults. And then children would have a fraction of that in B here. So then, in this case, poverty goes down to 26%. According to observed share, children are poor at 41%. So with individualized data, we see that we are clearly off the mark with the standard approach just based on equivalence gates. Okay. Or which not even equivalence gates, just the per capita, or some equivalence gates with reasonable needs for children. The model that I've presented here, and the favorite model with SAT and clothing, gives you a poverty of children of 51%, not so far from 57, and 35, not so far. Which is it's not exactly the same, of course, but it's still better than the traditional approach. Rothbard is doing something very, very similar. And here we have estimation of the mismatch, which is the percentage of poor children in non-poor households, using observed share, this fraction, and using the collective model, this fraction, so around 3/4 of the misclassified children, and those who are poor, even though they live in non-poor households, so traditional methods say, oh, they're not poor. No, they are poor. 3/4 of them are actually identified as misclassified according to the model in this case, and not so far here with a different assumption about child needs. So the conclusion is that welfare analysis typically based on equalized household expenditure ignores, of course, by definition, intra-household inequality. And in this context, we have the validation of a collective model, we find that even though it's not operationalized in policy analysis or welfare analysis very often, it tends to give reasonable prediction. So we have started with a test of the SAT assumptions and this preference stability assumption across family types, and it's broadly not rejected, except for large families. The resource sharing prediction is quite good, and the poverty assessment at the individual level, compared to individualized data, is also quite good. And as we just saw in the table, the traditional approach and based on equivalizing expenditure is clearly off the mark and understand poverty the poverty status of the poorest, which are children in these states, compared to good performance for a model which is based on clothing. Again, good news, because clothing is available usually. So I'm probably -2 or -5, but I just take 30 seconds to branch out to, there's a lot of extensions that we could do. For validation, make it more practical, include publicness in consumption or junkness in consumption, also for extended validation, account for good quality. We have calorie intake and the nutritive value of consumption, so we could move from pure value to actually aspects closer to malnutrition rather than just undernutrition. Or see in terms of energy or calorie intake that are received by certain type of people in the household, specific children, for instance. Back to the child labor question, are those who are better fed, those who work. We didn't really find these kind of things, but we just look at the value. We didn't look at the calorific value of the sharing process. So that would go in that direction. And now connecting a bit to the discussion this morning, there are some work we'd like to do with students, but I would be very happy to discuss if people are interested in wider for this kind of project in general. Is that there are two things. If the model is doing right, then we could generalize its estimation to many countries, many regions, many points in time, in order to get a mapping of individual poverty, so child poverty, women's poverty, etc., around the world, or across these different points in times and space, and put this picture that you get of the variation of the sharing rule against anthropological dimensions, not only the levels of sharing or inequality, but also the estimation that we've seen before, so the extent of pro-boy discrimination, the role of women's participation on the sharing rule, and so on. Also to use this world variation against other local indicators of norms, culture, etc., etc. That's for the levels of, say, individual poverty. Now, if you move to a dynamic picture, that would be the gradient of the sharing rule. We can't really do that with that here, because we are not sure that if we double the income of these families, the extra money is going to be spent exactly along this sharing rule that we've estimated. Maybe one was the dictator taking a lot of resources, but now if they become rich, the extra money, he will be generous and give it to the other members. Maybe not. So we don't know that, so to do that, we need to estimate, to replicate the estimation before and after important income shocks, be it positive shocks, randomized cash transfer a la Progressa, for instance, or negative income shock from climate shocks, these kind of things, and surrender this point in time corresponding to the shock with data that would allow us to basically have a before and after, and with control groups that are also not affected by the shock, and get information on how this sharing rule is behaving throughout this shock, and meaning who is losing the most in the household compared to the initial situation. So I think it's extremely important for policy making, and usually we've got this kind of exercise with direct measures on expenditure. I mean, is child education a luxury good, for instance? So directly we would have that with health or education or food. But here, the nice thing is that we change the outcome and it becomes directly a child poverty measure, truly based on individual resources. So the same kind of exercise that has been done before in other papers for specific natural experiment could be redone now just on the basis of clothing expenditure, basically. To finish on another extension is some of this income shock could be actually a tax benefit reform could be used for identification and then for simulation. Once you have well identified the model, then to predict whenever we use soft mode or other models to actually predict
certain type of policy reform, some universal cash transfer and so on, say something, tentative, but still say something about who would get the most of this reform, of this transfer in the household. I think I'm way over time, so apology for that, and thank you very much for your attention. In general.
Yeah. Okay. But by because of the clothing, you can assume that the woman is not wearing the man's clothes, even if she would buy it.
Yes.
Okay. One other data set that could be used, I think, here, but I'm not quite sure in terms of sample sizes, the Shwalita data set for Tanzania, if you've heard of that. But again, they have 4,000 households, but not only a small portion has the personal diary, so it might be too small.
Okay.
And that actually brings me to my next question, picking up to your first question before. So you're focusing here on up to 3 children, and you're focusing on nuclear families. In how far can this extend it to the population overall? Because there is, I think, an important step, I'm not quite sure how you do this, is this transfers in the family happening, and in so many developing countries we have 3 generation households, or there is not even
yes.
a parent generation, and of course that, then it's important first to understand how is the transfer happening, and how many families does it take out, and how many people out of the population are not covered by this approach.
Yes.
And this could relate also to the question on income effects of a change between 1 or 2 children, right? They
yes.
might just scale down the transfers that are happening within the bigger family as well.
Okay, thanks. That's you cover probably 10 years of future research in just one question. And so, first of all, thanks for the pointing to the Tanzanian data. I was not aware of them, and that's very interesting. We need to check how many people are in the personal diary, but I truly believe in replication. I think this, again, just one country, 1 year, we should do a lot more, and if people are interested to work on the Tanzanian data, let's go for it, because that's the technology is ready, and it's kind of quite simple, but it's absolutely necessary to try that for other countries, actually rich countries as well, but then you have to face the difficulty of integrating the publicness of consumption, even though it doesn't have to be fully identified, but possibly that's a complication. That's the sample size. So every time you have one line not per household, but per individual, because you use this individualized or assignable goods, so male clothing, female clothing, child clothing. So I report here the number of individuals, which is what matter. But you see that in childless couple, of course, you have only 101 couples, 201 individuals. That's the number of people in n equal 1, n equal 2, n equal 3. And n equal 4, it gets very, very small. So we just didn't put it, but with better data or bigger data, then we could look at families with more children and see how they, you know, if it, we do actually already quite bad with these larger families, and we do even worse with bigger ones or not, and so how to fix it and so on. So there's a lot of things to do. Now we've done replication only on nuclear households, and things go in the same direction, so we are kind of reassured, but it's complicated for sure, the assumption of separability between the consumption of the core household and the other members living with them, like uncles, grandmothers, and so on. This assumption is difficult, especially if when you start to have many children, maybe the grandmother comes to live with them to take care of the children. Therefore, the cost of children in the extended version, which is not just expenditure but also time, would vary, and necessarily what we
the one side of the picture that we see here might vary because of that. So it takes to augment this with labor supply, labor supply of the mothers, and possibly the impact of other members on expenditure and public goods and childcare. In terms of techniques, I think we can do that. It's really about having better data, because then if it's about sharing the resources, then which kind of assignable good do you use? Because typically adult male clothing for the father but the grandfather will be pulled together. So you need to find another identifying good in this context. Not clear what it is. So the technology is there, but again, the right data are still to be found to go in this direction. One paper I've got in mind is by my colleague Olivier Denis, was actually a model for South Africa, which is a collective model of labor supply, purely not consumption, like here. And when we have actually three generations, we have the grandparents, the parents, and the children. And each generation is unitary, a bit like in the Rothbard approach, where, you know, mother and fathers are one entity, and children are one entity, so each of them is unitary, but the interaction of both is collective. So we have that, and if you think about calibrating or estimating this model using natural experiments, like Duflo's paper on cash transfer to grandparents and how that affects the labor supply of other family members, you know, you could so again, in two steps, if you have two reforms, identify better the model based on this natural experiment to really estimate the behavioral parameters in a better way, and then check the prediction of this better identified model in at the next reform to see how well that would predict the behavior of these families in the next case. In the case of labor supply, it's even better, because the main good that you look at is leisure or time, and that is observed individually right away. So that could be done. But this three-generation model or these multi-groups apply to consumption that we didn't go that far, because again, we need better data. Well, the identification of the model is done at a certain level of expenditure. So in a way, I mean, that would mean that you could actually split, if you think in a discrete way, as splitting expenditure by broad groups of income brackets or expenditure bracket, then you would have identification within each. That means that the potential interaction between families of different expenditure level would not matter that much, or... So from what we said, I think the crucial aspect about it's not necessarily about exchange between different households, but it's exchange between, or maybe I got it wrong, but it's what you meant, exchange by different household members in larger households, where indeed the father, the big brother would let his clothes to or some other goods to younger children. That's something we have in mind for a long, long time. Economies of scale among children, which is certainly extremely relevant. I've just tested it here by looking if the shares according to children. If
individual expenditure or cyan clothing by different siblings depends on the age distance between these siblings, and it doesn't. But it might be due to the fact that it's small data and it's not precise, you cannot just get that. And a group of researchers is actually working at the moment on implementing in this framework economies of scale among children. That's our colleague Jacob Penglaser, Rossella Calvi, and Alex Wolf. So we have a very nice extended model. It's ongoing research, but soon it will come out, and hopefully they'll be able to identify this.
Thank you.